away. Oh! Elliott! Elliott! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Ailer's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Yeah. Welcome into another Indiana Sports Radio with Jim Coyle. I am the coach, Shannon Griffith, sitting in for Jim as he gets rested up and gets charged up. Here as the month of July is rolling right along, and before you know it, we're going to be knee deep into Indiana football in the month of August as they get ready to take on Old Dominion on August the 30th in Memorial Stadium. Thank you for joining us here this morning. A little bit better today than maybe yesterday in terms of prep for me and myself, but wanted to thank those that were with us yesterday and welcome those that are with us today. Appreciate you all being here. And we're going to get this thing rocking today. We've got a great lineup for today. We're going to talk with Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette here in a little bit. We'll talk to him a little bit about, you know, Indiana basketball, Indiana football, where he feels they are at in this point in time. Get his take on Puerto Rico and kind of what are some of the things he may be looking for from the first look at Coach DeVry's Hoosier basketball team as they get to take on the, I think they're taking on the Puerto Rican national team in a game or two, and then the Serbian pro team in a couple games as well. So we'll get a good look at the Indiana Hoosiers basketball in the month of August as well. And we talked about yesterday, we're just slammed in the month of July with all things from different parts of the world of sports. Wimbledon going on. You've got the British Open here in a couple weeks. Big Ten media days right around the corner and everything. We are sports fanatics about definitely enjoying the month of July. I want to give a shout out to my own home radio station up here in the Fort Wayne area, 1380 The Fan. They carry the Indiana Sports Radio with Jim Coyle as well. So those in Fort Wayne on 1380 The Fan, welcome. As well as down in Evansville at the Ref, ESPN's 97.7 down there. But a couple things that thought were pretty interesting, you know, getting some topics and discussion thing. It came out, I think, yesterday with the announcement of IU's Cream and Crimson Studios there on the campus of Indiana. Great production aspects of bringing all types of entertainment to Indiana athletics, as well as scoreboard operation and in-game things such as that. But the one thing that kind of stuck out to me with this new collaborative down there with the Big Ten, as well as with Big Ten Plus, is games that are airing on the Big Ten Plus platform. Those will actually be produced in-house there at Indiana with Cream and Crimson Studios. So what a great opportunity for those students that are looking for broadcasting opportunities as well as production opportunities, all things there with the new Cream and Crimson Studios right on the campus of Indiana University and working hand in hand with the Big Ten Network, Big Ten Plus Network, and being able to bring games provided by Big Ten Plus, but will be produced there at Indiana. So that in itself, I thought was a neat thing as well. That was added to the campus and everything hand in hand with that. So I'm interested to see how that is. I know they've got a beautiful setup there as it pertains to TV production and all the things, radio production. You saw how they did and everything with the Bison layout that Jeremy Gray brought to life. And that was just a phenomenal tidbit that they added to there on the Athletic website. I thought that was a unique thing. But having the opportunity to do all these productions there on campus is a big thing. And it's interesting how the Big Ten as well is network is providing opportunities for these different campuses to do these type of things and be a part of the overall broadcast and production of those broadcasts. So Cream and Crimson Studios, a big addition to the in-house production of Big Ten Plus material for this next year, which I thought was a unique and beautiful thing to see opportunity wise. A couple things too, as well, that kind of hit yesterday as well. Coach Cignetti has been added to the 2025 Dodd Trophy preseason watch list. Wasn't eligible last year, first year. This is more of second year and beyond coaches. A great honor to be in the nominations for that. We all can agree that is well-deserved when it comes to his aspects of what he has done at Indiana here over the last year, as well as being the character that he can be at times. But it's good to see him getting recognition in that arena around some great coaches from all over the country. So it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, falls together for Indiana and Coach Cignetti. I'm sure that is not anything of top of mind to him at this point in time. He is probably recharging these batteries, getting himself mentally and prepared for this next year coming up and enjoying a little time off and getting ready to get back at it here at the end of the month, because they usually take about a 3-week period there at the end of June and get a chance to get away with family and friends, vacation, whatever that might be, get themselves recharged and regrouped after coming off a blitzing two and a half months of recruiting from the 1st of May all the way up through the end of June. And the staff and Coach Cignetti will get back at it here probably in about a couple weeks as they prepare for the Big Ten media days. And then, of course, the arrival of fall camp here at the end of July. And it's hard to believe that that's right around the corner with everything. Also, Indiana added Ristic, the kid out of the Serbian national team, to their 2025-26 roster. He has been playing in the FIBA under 20 team, national team. I know that we talked with Mike DeCourcy yesterday about the being able to watch a lot of basketball, that FIBA under 19, U and under 19, 20, those type of teams. But Ristic announced by Indiana Basketball the other day as being added to the 25-26 roster and the Serbian national team. And it's really another great addition to already a very talented, on paper at least, but a very talented basketball team that he has assembled. And we're going to get to see them coming up here as well shortly, as they head to Puerto Rico, as I said earlier, where they got a chance to play the Puerto Rican national all-star team in a couple games, and then a Serbian pro team in a couple games. So that in itself it'll be an exciting time to really get a feel for Indiana basketball and where they're at. But I do think they've got a talented roster when you look at it on paper. So these are some of the things that are on top here in the next few days or weeks to come, is with all things from basketball to football, you name it. It is upon us. Also, another thing that I saw that I was interested in, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday to a degree, but some of the top evaluations, NIL valuations heading into this year, a little different. You know, you got the rev share part of the equation that that the players are being paid out of that $20 million house settlement that schools are now in the process of making those payments after July 1st. And then whatever NIL opportunities are out there for kids and some of the evaluation, we've talked about this young man yesterday as it pertained to a quote-unquote Heisman Trophy potential candidate, Arch Manning from Texas. He's played very, I wouldn't say limited, but he's had this past year an opportunity to play. But his evaluation right now and the deals that he has are with EA Sports, Red Bull, and Uber are prominently the three top ones. $6.8 million in NIL evaluations. $6.8 million representing the brands of EA Sports, Red Bull, and Uber. So that's his NIL eval. Carson Beck was the second one. Again, a quarterback, Miami of Florida. He transferred from Georgia to Miami. May have been some off-the-field reasons for that with a girl that played basketball there at Miami that may have led to that transfer. But he has an NIL package valuation of $4.3 million. So you're talking some big-time money for quarterbacks that have some brand and name recognition. Jeremiah Smith, the talented wide receiver at Ohio State. He is a beast when it comes to the wide receiver position. His val is $4.2 million. He has deals with American Eagle, Lululemon, Red Bull, Nintendo, and is a video cover game cover athlete. He's raking in $4.2 million. So you can just see that some of these guys and throughout the country, especially those that have top brand name awareness and being able to have thousands and thousands of social media followers, TikTok, Instagram, I would think would be the two prominent ones. X to a degree, but mostly in those other arenas, are getting paid quite well for their name, image, and likeness. But I found that what'll be interesting is the clearinghouse and how all that is going to be interpreted in terms of deals that will be presented to the clearinghouse that are anything over $600. Now you've got some guys that are making millions on their name, image, and likeness deals. Basketball, not any different. Toppin, Texas Tech, $2.8 million. I think they said that he received almost $4 million, I believe, so far in some of the Texas Tech collective to stay with the program as he was looking out at other opportunities. Lindenborg out of Michigan, $2.3. And they were able to keep him from the draft. And that's one thing with basketball now, is being able to keep some of your roster intact without guys going into the NBA draft. You know, getting that extra year or two of college experience to better prepare them for the NBA, because they're able to pay them with that. And then in basketball, we're already seeing it with some of the beyond the U.S. borders, bringing guys in from overseas and adding them into the roster as well. So you can see with all this changing the landscape of college athletics, college football, college basketball, for the most part, it's an interesting dynamic to really follow and try to understand. As you can see in football already, the quarterback position is kind of the dominant one. As we all said, the quarterback gets way too much recognition when things are going well and too much blame when things are going bad. But it just shows their marketability and the national exposure they gained from all the television deals and things like that. So a couple things there on top to talk about this morning. We're going to get out and take our first break here. When we come back, Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, we're going to be able to talk a little bit about Indiana football and basketball and maybe sneak in that dirty word of Purdue and talk about some of their football aspects as Coach Barry Odom gets ready to bring the Boilers into their first year under his leadership. But all things will be the talking about with Dylan right after we get back here on the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio with the coach Shannon Griffith setting in for Jim Coyle today and going to bring in Dylan Sin into our overall production. Dylan, didn't expect to see me today, did you?
You know, I got the email last night, so I was prepared. I was prepared to see you, but otherwise it would have been a jump scare. Let me tell you, I would have been worried.
Well, you know, I got to make sure that I got guys in here that can carry the old man along today, trying to live up to Jim's stature on the Sports Beat Radio. But I was just saying about we're at that time of year where there's just a lot of different things happening in the sports world, from Major League Baseball with the All-Star game upon us. You've got Wimbledon going on. You got the British Open in a couple of weeks, you know, not to slight the WNBA, but that's all going on with their All-Star game and that format and how that's all, you know, a unique thing. But for sports lovers, July is just an awesome month when you think about what is at your fingertips.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a little bit of a different, it's a little bit different than usual, right? Like it's not like January or February where there's like the grind of a long season. You have basketball going on, you have football going on, but it's a long season, right? These are kind of standalone events. Like you said, Wimbledon and the British Open, the Tour de France is happening. It's standalone things that don't happen over months and months. You get them in a condensed space and you kind of get to see a lot of different sports going on. So yeah, pretty exciting. And then of course, we're only about 3 weeks away now from college football training camp happening. So, and NFL training camp. So
yeah,
everything is coming closer and closer every day. And it's a pretty exciting time.
Yeah. NFL training camp, of course, is a lot closer than college football's start to training camp, and Indianapolis Colts will be getting ready to entertain as well as maybe have a pretty good competition at the quarterback position as they set up for this next season. And Anthony Richardson's really second year potentially at the helm. But right now, let's talk a little bit about Indiana football and kind of, you know, the overall sentiment with this 2026 class. And, you know, I just said before you came on that, you know, Coach Cignetti was added to the 2025 Dodd preseason watch list. Not surprising that his name was in that category with the other nation top coaches. He got to figure he's one of the top coaches, but what he's done more specifically here at Indiana within the last 2 years at that, when you look at the 2026 recruiting class at picking up Ronnell Jackson here of late, the four-star defensive edge player, what is kind of your overall sentiment of Indiana football right now heading into the second year, you know, going from last year and through great season and now a recruiting season that has him already top 25 class and probably within the top 10 of the Big Ten.
Yeah, I can't remember it. It's hard to remember a time where there was more optimism around the present and the future of IU football, right? The time you go back to, obviously, is 2020, right after they had that great season. Tom Allen seemed to have it rolling. But even then, the recruiting wasn't quite on the level that we've seen it now. I think that is the thing that we're seeing is that they brought it. We've talked before, and I'm sure most of our listeners at this point know all of the work that IU did in the transfer portal this offseason. They got some really talented players to replace the ones who are leaving. They kept basically everyone that they really wanted to keep, all of the really good players on their roster are sticking around. And so that was huge. But then on top of that, you start leveling up the high school recruiting, right? And Tom Allen had some good recruiting classes. Let's not forget how good of a job Tom Allen did in recruiting. The class that Kurt Cignetti is putting together this year is really, really good. And they're already making inroads in the 2027 class as well that I think are going to pay dividends. So it's really hard to remember a time that there was this much optimism around Indiana football, both what's going to happen in 2025. I think people are excited about it, and frankly, they should be. And then going forward, how are you going to be able to kind of keep that rolling over multiple years, at least on paper, with the talent you're bringing in? So it's a really good job Kurt Cignetti has done taking over a team that everyone knows they went 3-9 and then going 11-2 with mostly his guys, a lot of his guys from JMU, and then keeping it rolling, right? It would have been so easy for that to be a flash in the pan, for the coaches to scatter to the winds because they all got jobs off of that, and just keep it rolling from there. But they have not rested on their laurels in any way, shape, or form. I think that that's what's most impressive here.
I'm talking with Dylan Sin from the Journal Gazette. You know, Zach Browning had a great article. I think it was yesterday evening. Kind of went over and read it, and he was talking about, you know, what have we learned, and we were, you know, kind of talking about the same way here. There's no question that the success that Indiana has had to date has given them brand awareness, not just in the state of Indiana, but as well as in a national scope when it comes to the recruiting game. And this class of recruits in the 2026 class is heavily a defensive emphasis, getting the recruits that they have got thus far. And this was one thing that I saw. Four of IU's top five commits are D-line or edge rushers, which really tells you a lot where they think that they're going to have get that foundational aspect that certain positions build up. Talk about, you know, just overall your perspective there of, you know, that aspect and emphasis being on defense thus far. Like we talked about Ronald Jackson earlier, top 300 player. Gabe Hill was one of an earlier commitment as well from the defensive line. But Coach Kuntz and Coach Haynes, the defensive coordinator, really done a great job with this defensive flavor of the class. But kind of talk about some of the, you know, gets that they've got with not just ratings. They've got some 4-stars in this group, but some of the talent that is pretty much at the top of the chain when it comes to Indiana and recruiting, something that probably haven't seen in a long, long while.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about how they've really focused. Defensive line has been kind of the foundation of this whole thing, right? And I think that, obviously that's what it was last year for them, right? Like Mikhail Kamara was up there with CJ West, and they were just kind of wrecking shop, James Carpenter as well. And they're kind of wrecking shop on the defensive line. And that was a huge, huge part of how they were able to have success last season. And so they've gone out and really done a terrific job of kind of continuing that. You talked about Coach Kuntz and to a lesser extent, Coach Haynes on the recruiting trail here, because they will, Coach Kuntz is handling that defensive line very, very well. And he's another one of those guys where the fact they were able to keep him this offseason, when I'm sure he had offers other places because he did such a good job last year, it's really, really impressive. And then you see what he's able to do in really the first full recruiting class that IU has had It's just leveling up talent, right? That is what Chris Nettie and his staff came in. They realized IU was not recruiting to the level they needed to in order to achieve what they wanted to. I think that's really the crux of it. And they came in and said, we are going to change that. And so far they have. You talked about Ronnell Johnson, who's a top 300 player in the country. You don't get many of those at IU, but that's becoming more and more common. And so you're trying to build that depth along the offensive line, or along the defensive line, I should say, which is where you're really going to compete with the Ohio States, the Penn States, the Michigans, and year-by-year basis is you're going to have to be really good in the trenches, and that's obviously a priority for them.
Yeah, and don't forget Cameron McCaney, the young man out of IMG, who is, by the way, of Greenwood, Indiana. Indiana's in-state recruiting has been as good as any time that it has been, with 6 in-state commitments, and they've got some of the top kids in the state of Indiana. Casimir Hicks, the number 2 DB, Gibbs, from up in the region. So that is very, very, bodes very, very well for Coach Signetti and staff with the, you know, brand awareness and things of that magnitude, but they're able to get these talented kids and get them to come to Indiana, which is no easy feat now. I mean, 11-2, 1 year. Okay, great. We got to do more than just 1 year, you know, to continue this trend of being able to get some of these big time commitments as we go forward with everything. Jump over to Big Ten Media Days. Are you heading out to Vegas?
I am not heading out to Vegas. I think that was a little bit it's just not something that's in the Journal Gazette budget. You know, it's one of those things where we're better suited keeping me close to home, kind of covering it from what's available on TV and online, and doing some things closer to home here.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of news that happens. I'll be able to find most of it without taking a plane all the way out there for basically a glorified press conference.
Well, I got early clearance from the wife, and I thought, yeah, this could happen, and things went along, and then some other things hit the plate that unfortunately had me bowing out. So no Vegas for me in my future this year, but that's next, you know, here in a couple weeks, and kicking off really the season per se. One thing that jumping to IU basketball, we'll get off the Big Ten Media Days for now, but heading to Puerto Rico, Indiana basketball is heading to Puerto Rico here in August. And, you know, what are some things that you're specifically looking for with that? And Coach DeFry is getting a chance to see his team for the very first time out on the court playing against competition.
Yeah. I mean, like it's, the list is so long because there's no continuity. Like, everyone is new. So you're kind of looking to see, I guess, number one is Tucker DeVries going to play, right? Like, how healthy is he? Is he ready to go? And if he is ready to go, how is his feel on the court? Is it going to take him some time to get back up to speed? Number two, what are they doing at point guard, right? They have several options there. I continue to think that Tayton Conerway is going to be not only the point guard, but one of the best point guards in the Big Ten. I think, especially from a defensive standpoint, he gives them a real difference maker out there. But then how do you fit in Connor Enright, who's a very, very good player in his own right? And so they have options at that position. And then basically just overall feel, right? Do these guys have any feel for each other at all? Like, I mean, they get those 10 extra practices because they're going on the trip. The NCAA gives them 10 extra practices during the summer. How much feel for each other were they able to develop during those practices, right? And then obviously in the regular workouts that you're allowed to have, the 4 hours a week. Is it one of those things where these guys are just, it's just basketball, right? They're going to be able to figure it out because it's basketball and they can play together. Or is this one of those things that's going to take a while? Like, even once the season starts, are we going to have to see December, early January before these guys really start to gel, just because there's so much new? These guys are all, outside of Tucker DeVries, basically, these guys are all learning a new system. How far along can they possibly be? I'm fascinated to see that, frankly. So there's so much new. And I guess the last thing would be, what are they going to do at center, right? Like, what is the plan there? Is Reed Bailey going to play the five? I think that's probably the most likely option. Is he going to play a big four and have someone else play the fives? Sam Alexis maybe is Alexis going to come off the bench? That was one of those things where it's kind of like, all right, the roster makes sense for the most part, but center is going to be a question of not do they have one, but how do they deploy the ones they do have? So there's a lot on your plate here when you're looking at this trip, because it's like these guys are also new. It's the first time we're seeing them on the court together. It's the first time we're seeing Darren DeVries coach. It's the first at IU. It's the first time we're seeing him coach these guys in particular. So I'm going to be fascinated. Like, it's one of those things where there's so much to learn. It's almost going to be information overload. Every single possession is going to be like, oh, that's new. Oh, that's new. Oh, that's different. You're running that set. I've never seen that before, you know, and it's going to be something to watch. I'm fascinated.
Well, we're going to step aside, take a quick break, and Dylan's going to be back here with us right after this message here on the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back to the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Coach Shannon Griffith filling in for Mr. Jim Coyle. He's taking a little break and recharging his own batteries as he's getting ready to get into the swing of things here in July. And he asked me a week ago about doing this, and I said, well, sure, I'd be glad to fill in and help you out any way you can. And yesterday he called me and reminded me about doing this. So anyways, when you want me to do Wednesday, he goes, no, about 15 minutes. Yesterday was fun getting into the swing of things. Talk with Dylan Sinn here from the Journal Gazette here in Fort Wayne. And no, we are not neighbors in Fort Wayne, as one of the comments was asking if we were neighbors. But I guess you could say county neighbors, per se, maybe. I live over in the Columbia City area of Fort Wayne and Whitley County.
There you go.
Talking, you know, with Dylan here about Indiana basketball and the Puerto Rico, I guess you call it a tourney, coming up, as they will play the Puerto Rican national team or all-star team, and then a Serbian national pro team for a couple games down there. I do not know how good that is of basketball. I would say fairly comparable to other college level programs within the states, that they'll get a test up against them. And you talked about the coaching staff getting their first opportunity here. And the biggest thing, too, with the coaching staff is the first time that they'll be able to interact as a staff in a live game situation. How impressed were you with the staff that he's assembled there? I mean, I was, you know, I've been pretty impressed on who he's been able to attract to Indiana, not just from a coaching standpoint, but from the recruiting aspect and things of that nature. What is your take on the staff that he's assembled there with him at Indiana, and then getting a chance to really work at it, their continuity come August down there in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, I was really impressed, frankly, with the staff he put together. I thought he did a really good job of getting guys who, first of all, know Indiana, but second of all, know recruiting, right? Like, Darren DeVries, his reputation as a basketball coach was not built on recruiting, right? That was not something where it's like, oh, Darren DeVries is a guy who's going to go out and get everybody. And so when he came to IU, he very clearly realized, well, this is a program where you got to go recruit, and you got to recruit big fish. And so he went and got Drew Adams, and he went and got Kenny Johnson, and he went and got the rising star from Tennessee, whose name is escaping me at the moment. That is a staff that you put together that has a lot of connections in the recruiting world, has a lot of wins in the recruiting world under its belt already. And we've already seen that pay dividends, right? I thought they did a good job of filling out the roster. I thought that one thing that impressed me when they were filling out the roster in the transfer portal was the competence of the way they were able to get these guys in, get them on campus, make them feel wanted, let them know what role they were going to have on the team, and then get them to commit. There were several guys in that group that had other visits scheduled and canceled them after they went to Bloomington, right? That to me speaks to a coaching staff that knows what it's doing on the recruiting trail and when it gets a recruit on campus. I think that that is going to be really, really important going forward. And so I was impressed by that staff. Now, we'll see what happens when they get into a game situation, right? These are not guys who are who have been like associate head coaches really involved in game planning over many, many years. That's something that the staff is going to have to grow into, I think, at least a little bit. And so we're going to see. And DeVries obviously has had, he had almost 20 years as assistant coach at Creighton. He was the head coach at Drake, where you're intimately involved in game planning as a head coach. Obviously, it's not one of those ones where jobs where you're a CEO or anything like that and just overseeing the assistant coach is doing that. So I'm sure he will take point on a lot of that, and we'll have to see how the other assistant coaches fit into it. But I am really fascinated to see how that goes, because as you said, it is the first time just seeing this staff interact together on the bench, seeing them interact with their players. Who do they trust already, right? Who is going to be a leader among the players if there's a tough moment where you're down five and the other team has momentum, you have to call timeout. Who's going to be the guy who's vocal in the huddle, right? Who's going to be the guy who goes and gets you a bucket when the offense isn't working the way you want it to, right? These are all things we're going to be learning for the first time. And I'm really fascinated to see it, because it is just, again, so new. Everything is turned over, and you're having an entirely fresh slate for this IU team in a way that basically we haven't had since, what, 2008, right? Yeah. When the first year of the Tom Crean era, where no one knew who anyone was. Now, this team has a lot more talent than that one, right, which is good. I don't think this team is going to win six games. So we'll see a little bit more. The answers will be more forthcoming, I believe, for this season. But we'll get the first of those answers when they're down in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, no question. This Puerto Rican trip is a huge opportunity to really get a peek at what they have, both on the court and along the bench. I think one thing that has stood out to me as a former coach, and what Coach Cignetti has as a staff, what Coach DeVries brought in as a staff, a lot of guys that have relatability to kids. I mean, in their background, you know that there's always something that you can pick up in terms of a recruit talking about their interaction with a coach from Indiana. And I think that bodes so well, because the X's and O's of stuff, you know, Coach Sig and Coach DeVries are going to be able to communicate what they're wanting, what they're looking for X and O's wise with the coaches, and they're going to coach them up. But when you have a coach that's out on the road representing the brand, they have to have that relatability in the circles that they're in terms of communicating with these young kids and basically providing them a opportunity with coming into a school like Indiana. So I think that's one thing that they've done very well with their staffs assembled there at both football and basketball when it comes to that aspect, because it's so critical now in the recruiting era when you think about it. You know, the relatability factor, the brand awareness comes through winning and all those things. But now with NIL and the rev share, that just adds a whole different dynamic to this equation, that you have to have top-notch people in those right positions to have an effective staff that understands the goal and understands what needs to be done, not only on the court, but with the kids as well as the recruits. So I just thought that was a unique thing there, but you're right. Puerto Rico is going to give us a lot of insight to what is good, what needs to be improved. But I do think they've got a phenomenal roster, in my opinion, of what they've got on paper. Now, paper doesn't win ball games. No. Same thing with, you know, Cignetti last year. He had a lot of great players on paper. They were able to prove it. Let's, before we let you go here, Dylan, we'll jump over to some Purdue stuff, because, you know, here we got in the background Barry Odom getting ready for his first season in Purdue. You know, got fired at Missouri, you know, a few years back, you know, kind of struggled in some respects at Mizzou. Not an easy place to win at. And of course, being in the SEC makes it even that difficult of a job. But he goes out to Vegas, does a great job out there, turns it around, and now he's got a chance again at a P4 institution. What did you think, A, of the hire Purdue made with a guy like Barry Odom, defensive-minded coach, but that elder statesman per se?
I thought it was a good hire, frankly. He was on my list of guys who they should be looking at. I thought outside the Mizzou stuff, he went 500 at Mizzou, which is not it's not a terrible job. He did fine. Eli Drinkwitz, who succeeded him, also went 500 in his first three seasons before really getting it going. So I don't think there's any shame in going 500 at Mizzou in an extremely tough conference. But then what he did at UNLV, which is a program that had been nothing for 25 years, basically. They had not had an eight-win season since 2000. And then he had two of them back-to-back, including a 10-win season. Really, really impressive. They were a couple of plays away from being a high-level, like a college football playoff considerant. They almost beat Boise State last year, who did make the playoffs. So he did a really good job there in just 2 years of building it quickly. He learned how to, the transfer portal. He learned how to bring guys in and deploy them very quickly for a team that had not had success before. And so I thought it was a good hire, and he came in and said a lot of the right things that Purdue fans want to hear, including basically this is not a rebuild. That's what he said. They're going to win, and they're going to win immediately. That was the statement when he was hired. Now, he very clearly thought that significant changes needed to be made for that to happen, right? They brought in over 50 transfers this offseason.
Yeah, a boatload.
Yes, including more than 20 in the spring window, right? Like, they went through spring practice, and he said, boy, we still need a lot of guys. And so he brought in 20 more. And so now the question is, how are those guys going to – it's basically like IU for basketball, right? Mm-hmm. How are these guys going to fit together? Because he brought in some guys from UNLV. He brought in some pretty good players from UNLV. Several linemen, I think, is where he got the most talent from UNLV. And then the special teams as well, which was fantastic. One of the best special teams units in the country. He brought in a lot of the guys who were responsible for that, including the special teams coach, James Shivest. So – There are aspects of what he brought in from UNLV, but it's not Cignetti with James Madison. He didn't import most of the best players from the roster, right? Because right. It was an older team at UNLV. There were not as many guys with eligibility remaining. So then he went and just scoured everywhere for everything and looking in every corner for talent. He went to FCS. He had some D2 guys in there he brought up. So they really, in the spring window, focused on the line. He really went hard in the offensive and defensive line in the spring window, which they clearly thought was an area for concern after spring practice. So we'll see what they were able to do there. It really is one of those things with this, like kind of with IU basketball, where there's so much new, it's really hard to even say how this is going to work because so many of these guys haven't even put on a Purdue uniform before. And so much of the staff has never had it been a Purdue uniform before. So we're going to see. I think it was a good hire. I don't think they're going to do an Indiana where they kind of take everyone by storm. I think if you see progress and you see four or five wins this year after going 1-11 last year with a totally overturned roster, I think that's perfectly acceptable for year one. And so I think that's probably where they're headed. But which sounds like I'm kind of damning them with faint praise on paper. I'm not. I think an improvement from 1-11 to 4-8 or 5-7 is perfectly acceptable for year one. And then you build on that with another transfer class and you start building recruiting inroads, which he's done. So I think that they are in good hands going forward, but it's going to take a little bit longer than IU because no one's Kurt Cignetti. It just the fundamental fact is no one is Kurt Cignetti. And so you are going to need to be a little bit of a longer build if you're basically anybody else.
Well, that was kind of the question or avenue I was approaching is, I think I saw that the over-under wins for them right now is 3 for this year. That's kind of the over-under, which I thought was kind of surprising to a degree. And you're correct, a team that was 1-11 and a year ago, new staff hire for them to get into a four-win, five-win type of season, or, you know, if the wind blows right, 6 would be a monumental jump. An increase in that. But I was wondering the same thing, is Purdue and the Big Ten of things, you know, with the number of transfers they've brought in, are they potentially the new Indiana in terms of flipping it as quickly as Coach Cignetti did, you know, having that monumental season a year ago of going 11-1. Is Purdue capable and Barry Odom capable of doing that? And I think you've kind of answered that, but your kind of feeling is no, that is, you don't think that's going to be capable.
No, and that is the problem here, right? I think that's the problem for Barry Odom, and that's why this Purdue situation specifically is going to be such a tough job, is because every Purdue fan, right, fairly or unfairly, is going to be looking at IU and being like, well, why can't we do that? They just hired a guy and brought him in. But the problem is that Kurt Cignetti is one of the five best coaches in the country, and IU just happened to get him at the right time. And then he was able to, and then because of the final COVID years, IU was able to bring in a bunch of guys from his last team that had a year of eligibility left and get them and really build a team around them. And they got the right quarterback in Curtis Rourke, right? Purdue did not go out and get a quarterback that's proven this offseason. They brought it. Ryan Brown, who started some games for them last year, transferred to North Carolina and then came back in the spring window when they weren't really satisfied with any of their other quarterback options. So it is one of those things where I think that Kurt Cignetti and what Indiana and Kurt Cignetti did last year was a one of one. It is not going to happen at Purdue. It is not going to happen at basically any other school you can think of. It's just not. I'm sorry. And so, and that is not to say that Barry Odom is not a good football coach, because I think he is. I just think that it was such a unique situation. Everything came together for Indiana last year that expecting it to be replicated or even close to replicated is difficult. I think the other part of this is that Purdue went 1-11 last year, but they had some really talented players on that team, right?
Yeah.
Dylan Thienemann, Will Helt, Max Clair, a bunch of other guys. DJ Wingfield went to USC, right? Like
Thienemann went to Oregon. I would have loved for Indiana picked him up because he's a player.
Absolutely. Like they had players. Cole Brevard went to Texas. Right. Like they had really high level dudes on that team and they still went 1-11. And then you lost basically every single high level dude on that team. There is not a guy from that team that really, really contributed. And you said, that's a dude that we want to keep at state. And so other than Brown, basically, who left and then came back. It is a total roster turnover. Indiana at least had a couple of guys who stuck around and you were like, OK, I can see where, like Mike Kadick. Right. Purdue doesn't really have a Mike Kadick that was a leader of the previous team that is going to be a leader of this team. I don't really think that exists on this roster. And so, like, there are some holdovers, obviously. Not every single player transferred, but it's not, like, veteran guy that we've kept around that's really been a fixture of the locker room. So it really was an entire teardown and rebuild, and you're just not going to get a totally cohesive team out of that in one offseason. It's just not possible. So we're going to see. I think Purdue, the problem also for Purdue is they have a difficult schedule, right? They get Michigan, they get Ohio State, they get USC, they have Notre Dame in the non-conference. There really isn't a guarantee. There really isn't a guaranteed win on their conference schedule, and they only have two non-conference games that I would consider guaranteed wins. So you're going to be scrapping and clawing every single week. Illinois is really good. They have them on the schedule. So it's going to be, hey, how many can we scratch out here? And if you get to 4 or 5, great. Year one, that's where you want to be.
Well, they open the year against my alma mater and where I coached for 8 years, Ball State. They play them with new coaching staff in place there. Then they play Southern Illinois. Then they go back-to-back games, USC and Notre Dame. And then follow that with Illinois. So they, you know, their schedule probably in the middle part of the year maybe gets them a little bit better in the competition arena. But to go back to back USC and Notre Dame, that's no friendly schedule when you think about that aspect of things. So, but one more thing here, Omar Mayer, the kid from Israel that's coming into Purdue, playing in the he's in the FIBA under 19 group. We're seeing this with basketball now, with being able to go overseas and with NIL and the rev share, they're being able to bring in some kids from overseas that are darn good basketball players. This Omar Mayer kind of fits that stature for Purdue basketball.
This dude is the truth. That dude is a dude. You watch his game. He is a fully formed product at 17 years old. He's only going to get better. He can shoot three. He can pass it. I think the biggest thing is that despite being 17, 18 years old, he is developed in his body, right? He's not going to get pushed around in the Big Ten. I would expect him to push for minutes and a rotation spot right away at Purdue. And some people already talked about him being a one and done. I don't think that's probably going to happen. I think that with Braden Smith in there, you're probably grooming him to be the guy in his sophomore year. But it's not just that they got a guy from Europe. A lot of people have gotten guys from Europe. It is that they went out and got a guy who is going to contribute significantly for them immediately, and a guy with a huge skill set. Like, his recruitment is weird to me because it really heated up at the end, and he had offers from some really, really big-time programs. I think Duke was pursuing him heavily, and the fact that Purdue was able to kind of keep him keep him in-house was really impressive. So you have to maybe wonder if Travion Williams, who he played with over there in Israel, had a say in that, which good for Travion Williams if that is the case. And so it's one of those things where I think that they got a real steal here, a guy who was under the radar when they got him, and then he kind of blew up afterward. To me, he is the most it's the most excited I've been for a guy coming into Purdue since Biggie, since Caleb Swanigan. And I understand that like no one was this excited for Zach Edey to come into Purdue, right? Despite the fact that he ended up being a fantastic player, he wasn't that guy coming out of high school, as many people have pointed out over the years. Same with Jaden Ivey, same with Carson Edwards. Those guys were good players once they got on campus. But I think the Omer Mayer is a guy who you know coming into campus is going to be a guy, which is not something Purdue gets on a regular basis. So we're going to see. You don't want to go too overboard with the hype on him because he is just coming in as a kid, but it's really hard to watch the tape and not get really excited for his game.
Yeah. And you know, Indiana with the risk kid that they're bringing in from the Serbian national team, Mayer, you're getting from Israel. You can just kind of see a little bit of a trend here where you're going to see more of a, world recruiting in that regard,
because international recruiting, and
it's strictly because of rev share and NIL money that these kids from overseas are potentially could be lured into the States. And it's not like they haven't done that before, that they, you know, this isn't the only kid that's come in from an international flavor, but I do think you're going to see more and more of it because of the ability to pay them and get them here, and they can, you know, have a comfortable collegiate life. And if their vision of playing in the NBA, they're going to get to go against some of the best talent in the world anyway, right here in the States. So I do think it's going to be one of those scenarios that we're going to see more and more of it with some of these things. But last thing here, Matt Painter was ripping Michigan and I think Dusty May for trying to get Braden Smith to come to Michigan. Anything in your arena? Have you heard anything about that in terms of Michigan trying to really lure him away?
I had not heard anything specific on that. I just know that he had suitors this offseason.
Oh yeah,
he had suitors. Right? He was some of the numbers that have been thrown around are wild and crazy, and you never know what to believe in that space because so much of it is rumor and innuendo. But it's one of those things where that's just kind of college sports now. If you are a high level player and you have proven yourself at the highest level, you are going to get offers in the several millions from the biggest schools, and you are going to have to kind of figure out. That's why all these guys have agents. It's not because, well, they're greedy and they want every penny. It's they need someone to navigate this, right? They need someone to basically field these million phone calls you're going to get and say, hey, does this guy want this and this money from this and this school? How real is this, right? And again, we've talked about Purdue and over the years about how they need to invest more in that athletic department. And they've done that, right? Like that's the thing. They over the years they built the football building. They gave Barry Odom a significant contract to get him here from UNLV, and then on top of that, they kept this basketball roster together, which was not cheap. I can tell you that right now. It is a very, very expensive roster because they have so many guys that have proven themselves, right? Like, I'm sure like there's some probably hometown discount there to some extent. You're gonna take a little bit less to stay home because you want to be at Purdue. These guys all want to be at Purdue, but these are proven players. Trey Kaufman, Wren, and Braden Smith are maybe two of the 10 best players in the country. They needed to pay to keep them home, and yeah. So that is the athletic department and the Purdue donor base stepping up, and obviously they needed to because those guys were getting huge offers from elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, Dylan, I really thank you for joining us here on the Indiana Sports Beat Radio and stepping in and give us all your wisdom as you always do each and every week here. And look forward to talking with you down the line as we gear up for the start of college football here in a couple weeks.
Absolutely, Griff. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Dylan Sin from the Journal Gazette joining us here today on the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Just a couple of reminders. Make sure you visit Hard Truth for all your bourbon needs, as they have some great selections there. And also, if you're in the market for a car, Andy Moore Honda is a place that you can stop off and get. And I'm sure Jim would appreciate it if you do. Mention Indiana Sports Beat Radio because it goes a long way with everything. We're going to step aside, take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Kyle Netterup from the Indianapolis Star. Little high school football talk as we get ready for high school football to kick off here shortly. We'll be with him right after we get back here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after this for our friend Jim Coyle today. And hope you're enjoying the show as we just got done with Dylan Sin from the Journal Gazette talking a little bit of basketball and football at Indiana and, of course, a little bit of Purdue. You know, high school football is right around the corner as well. And going to bring in our next guest, Kyle Netterup from the Indianapolis Star. Let's see if I can get you. Well, what's going on here? There he is. Kyle, how are you today? I appreciate you joining us. And I am not Jim Coyle. No,
you look better than Jim.
Well, don't tell him that. He won't like that. But you know, we all know that high school football is fastly approaching, just like NFL training camps fastly approaching, as well as college football training camp is approaching. High school football is right there with them up here in Northeast Indiana. The high school media day is July the 15th. Up here, as they will couple the media day with the Indiana Football Hall of Fame inductions. Thomas Hammack, one of them, who played at Bishop Lewis as the head coach at Northern Illinois, will be inducted into the Indiana Football Hall of Fame. But July 15th is their media day. And in my spare time, I provide color analysts up here on 1380 The Fan's coverage of high school football, and done that for last few years. And was reading an article you had yesterday, I believe, about some of the top prospects that in the state of Indiana and some of the key commitments there. But when things down there in central Indiana, what are some things that in terms of top teams would you say are going to be teams to keep an eye on for this 25 high school football season?
Yeah, I'm just starting to dive in into that myself. You know, we've got we do a couple different media nights. I think we're going to do them here later in, I know we're going to do them here later in July, but yeah, that'll be, you know, I think you have to start in 6A with Brownsburg, which won the, you know, I always kind of start with the state champion first and give them the benefit of the doubt to repeat. I did that last year with Ben Davis. It didn't really pan out that way. But, you know, I think with Brownsburg, though, you know, and they did kind of have a, you know, I wouldn't say a miracle run, but they won a lot of close games during the tournament. They were down 35-7 in the first round of the sectional to that Ben Davis team and came back and won. But most of their offense returns, and that'll be a big you know, that'll be a big benefit to them, including Oscar Fry, their quarterback. They got two good running backs that they used primarily last year. That'll be back. Their receiving core's back. Their defense is almost totally retooled, but they do have a lot of talent on that side. And they, and really, they're kind of a, you look at the next 2 years, they're going to have it set up pretty well. It's really hard to repeat in 6A, let alone, you know, try to three-peat, which Center Grove did a few years ago, but that just normally doesn't happen that way. So, you know, I don't know that they're like a slam dunk pick to win 6A either, but they will be near the top, I will say. And I think Center Grove, I think, is another team that, you know, when you look at what they did last year, they almost beat Brownsburg in that semi-state game. They had it, they were throwing into the end zone with the chance to win it. And, you know, the guy goes into the flat, the tight end goes into the flat, and he's open. But the Brownsburg linebacker gets to the quarterback and just kind of makes him flutter it and get rid of it early. Or maybe they win state, you know, so you don't know, you know. So that's how close it is a lot of times in 6A. But, you know, I think Center Grove, I think Warren Central, new coach JT Whitaker came over from Brownsburg. He was offensive coordinator there. Warren has got they always have a lot of talent, but I think they've got the right, they've got some pieces that probably fit together on offense a little bit better than they did last year. Their defense was outstanding last year. Their offense really kind of sputtered, but I think they'll be better on that side of the ball. And then, you know, you look at the north side of the bracket, Westfield's kind of been the team to beat these last couple of years. I know they felt last year like they had the team that could win it, and they almost did. Again, that 6A championship against Brownsburg, a really close game, really, really great game. But they do lose quite a bit, you know. And Crown Point's a team I think, you know, we don't talk about around here as much nearly because, you know, they're not in the central Indiana area. But, you know, they have been really strong these last couple of years. And last year they lost to Westfield pretty handily in the semi-state. But year before made it to the state finals. A lot of talent returning for that Crown Point team. They're sort of a team that, you know, I think has earned some of the respect that these other 6A teams around here get. So that'll be an interesting team to watch. And they have not really been challenged during the regular season these last couple of years. So they do add Pike to the schedule. They play at Pike in the second week of the year. Pike's a much better team than they've been in the past. So I think that's good for them to play some, you know, Central Indiana 6A teams to kind of get ready for the tournament. But yeah, and one more, you know, kind of interesting storyline too is Cathedral goes down to 5A.
Yeah.
Decatur Central moves up. So you got, they sort of flip flop spots. Decatur has been, you know, very strong in 5A, won state in 5A last year. So now they're in 6A and they have a lot of talent returning. You know, Casimir Hicks, who's going to IU, their top receiver, he is, you know, really fast, really good player. So now they're playing 6A, you know, that'll be a storyline to look at going into the year. Can they compete at that level? You know, they open up with Avon and Newpal, so they'll find out, you know, very quickly. So, you know, it'll be fun. I love 6A, you know, all of high school football, but especially 6A is always so fun to kind of, you know, parse through the talent and, you know, see what things look like that first night and then kind of go from there. But yeah, there's a lot of, I probably say this a lot of times, but I think there's a lot of teams that can win 6A. I would give Brownsburg a little bit of an edge, you know, just because they are coming off the title last year, but it's not by much, if anything.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's been more and more parity, I guess you could say, in high school football over the last several years, and a lot of that has to do with the time that these coaches get to be with kids now. In terms of actually being able to coach them in times of years that in past were not able to, you know, and they've gotten the chance now where it's almost becoming year round in some respects, but are seeing a lot of really good football in Indiana overall. And you can just tell why it's been pretty good is some of the commitments that have already happened this year. And, you know, we talked about, at the start of high school football. And I think that is August 4th is when it kicks off. And I think the first full week of games is August 22nd. But let's talk a little bit about some of the commitments that you talked about in the state of Indiana, more specifically there in central Indiana areas of high school football teams and players and such. But you know, Center Grove seems to be pumping them out quite a bit as well. With that, you got Seifries from the O-line center from Center Grove. And then, Cherry, who's going to Purdue, which I thought was an interesting thing because I thought, well, if I use Cherry, gets the back in the healthy and finds his way on the field, he may have to look out for his brother coming off the edge because his brother, Kobe, is a beast of a player and a pretty darn good baseball player. But talk about that aspect of it, some of the rise of talent in Indiana from a recruiting standpoint and some of the places that some of these kids are going.
Yeah, I actually asked Kobe about that. I said, hopefully, you're going to come around the corner and see Tyler, what happens there, brother versus brother. He says, well, hopefully that, we both have that opportunity at some point for that to happen. But, he said he would have no hesitation to sack his brother. So I didn't expect any other answer to that. But yeah, I think, and he's a guy too, his overall rating and ranking and whatnot by the national recruiting sites has kind of gone down. But that was in part because he didn't play last year. He had an injury, missed the season. He came back and did play baseball this past spring, but that was his last, spring playing. He'll enroll early for football after his, after this fall semester, this fall at Center Grove. So, but I think he's a guy that, I think he could have a huge impact this year and really at Purdue too. He's a big dude who, very athletic. He was ranked a lot higher than this before the injury that cost him, basically his entire junior season. But I think he's a guy that could end up a lot higher, be an impactful player in this class. But yeah, you look at most of the 2026 guys have committed now. Just the other night, the two kids from Heritage Hills, Tyler Ruxer and Jet Goldsberry. And Goldsberry's a guy who I think will be in the mix for Mr. Football. He might be you could say he might be the favorite going in with all he's accomplished already for Heritage Hills. He's not the top recruit necessarily. He won't play quarterback in college, but going to Ole Miss, Ruxer, who's even a higher level commit, going to Oklahoma, or higher ranked commit, I should say. Going to Oklahoma to play tight end receiver, sort of a guy who can maybe do both for you, but good size player for sure. But yeah, some of the other ones, JJ Finch, Jeremy Finch Jr., going to Alabama for Warren Central, super talent, defensive end / linebacker. He's certainly one of the top guys in the class, has been for a long time. I mentioned earlier, Kazmir Hicks, who, if you look on the front list, he's one of the ones that he's definitely a smaller guy, but he is electric in the open field. I had a chance to cover him quite a few times last year, and every game was just like, he made game-changing plays constantly. It'll be fun to see him play 6 because he has 6A speed for sure. So it'll be fun to see him play against 6A competition this year. They do that anyway at Decatur. Mm-hmm. They have a good schedule, but he's definitely will be a lot of fun to watch, I think, this year too. Tyler Terry Walker he transferred from Lawrence Central. He played the last 3 years, mostly his sophomore and junior year, but did get a little time as a freshman even at LC, and now he's at HSE. So he actually lives in Fishers. He transferred to HSE this coming year. He's committed to Duke, but he's one of those one of those guys who's a dual threat quarterback, run and pass, playing with probably a little bit better team this coming year. Although LC, I think, has got a chance to be pretty good still. But HSC has consistently been better these last couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see what he does this year as a senior with that HSC team. And then some of the other ones, James Williams Jr. from LC going to Purdue, really good kid, funny kid. I'm looking forward to our media day with him. I think he'll give us some laughs, I think, in our interviews, but he's going to Purdue as well. So if you look down the list, I think Purdue is doing pretty well. IU also too, doing well in this class. They've kind of gone some different areas with the transfer portal and, maybe making that a little bit more of a priority, but also getting some in-state kids. And, I'll be curious to see what they do kind of moving forward. You mentioned Seifries from Center Grove, the big offensive lineman. He's a Mack truck. He's a big dude.
Yeah.
And then also, You know, they got Blake Smythe, who I think, you know, he's a really talented defensive lineman, quick for his size, you know, super quick on the defensive line. So I'm you know, looking forward to seeing what he does as well. And I mentioned Crown Point earlier, Trevor Gibbs, who's a linebacker, a big linebacker, a really good size linebacker, going to IU as well. So they've done well in this class to get those guys. I'm sure they would have liked to get, you know, a couple other ones, but, you know, it's always tough when you get, you know, you get into the mix with, you know, the big dogs of the world, the kind of the blue bloods of college football, like Alabama and Oklahoma and people like that. And, you know, it's even though the year IU had last year, it's tough to win those battles. I always, in the years I've done it, it's like anytime Ohio State gets interested, you know, it's pretty much a done deal. It's kind of like when Michigan State in basketball, you know, when Izzo comes into Indiana, he means business. He usually gets who he wants to get. It's kind of the same with, you know, Ohio State football. When they come in, it's hard to beat those guys, even if you've been recruiting people for a while. But in this class, I think they've done pretty well. They've gotten most of the players I think they wanted to get. The 2027 class, I think, will be, you know, that will be one to watch too, because Monchun Sales, who is a big-time receiver, I know he likes IU, and I think IU's got some inroads there with Omar Cooper, who would definitely be on the roster. They've got Davion Chandler coming in, another guy who's really fun to interview for those who do that on our side of the job. But, you know, having those two guys, I think, will help with Sales, who's a four-star or five-star, depending on who you look at. He's a top 20 guy in the nation, so. IU's in the mix for him. Caleb Elkins from Warren is a safety, a big safety, who's, I think, also a top, you know, not maybe not top 20, but, you know, three or four star, I think four star by most accounts. And Jack Sorgi did commit out of that 2027 class to Louisville. So he got in early. Quarterbacks are a little bit different. You kind of have to get your spot, and there's not as many offers that go out. So I think that was kind of the case there. Felt really good about, you know, Louisville and Brom being there, and then of course Jack's dad Jim played for the Colts, he's a name people know as well. So he got in a little bit early, but will be some other good players in that class. That class will be fun to watch, in large part because of Sales and also Elkins, but some other good players in that group as well.
Yeah, no question. The 2027 class is, and Indiana's already made their inroads with some kids there. And like you said, I think they made their inroads in state, and it's important to try to keep the best talent at home. I mean, that is the toughest part that Indiana and even Purdue, for the most part, has not been able to keep that top tier five star type of kid from Indiana at home. And you kind of alluded to Finch going to Alabama, and I believe you said, is it Goldsberry went to Ole Miss, the tight end from Garen, Catholic, is going to Oklahoma. But, you know, the state of Indiana is well represented with high school talent in football, and not something that you would say too much over the years, but there's a lot more big time programs coming in Indiana. Miami of Florida's come into Indiana, picked up a couple of kids. Brock Schott up here around from Leo High School is there now. And you talked about some of the other kids that are going to some of the mid majors. You got Bauer from Carmel going to Charlotte, Maverick from the old lineman at Westfield, who I think is a really good player. He's going to OU. Robinson, the wide receiver from Brownsburg, who, you know, 12 touchdowns a year ago, committed to Central Michigan. So a lot of top tier talent in Indiana, and in terms of high school football is concerned. And, you know, the other thing you had listed, I tell you what, I'll take a break, and we'll come back and pick up this and a couple other things I want to get to, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that works. That's fine.
All right, buddy. Well, we're going to be back right more talking some Indiana high school football, and we'll sneak in some high school basketball as well right here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, talking Indiana high school football, and we'll get into some of the basketball aspects of it here in a short bit. You know, Kyle, one thing that I wanted to get your opinion on, because this is something that is over the landscape of high school athletics going forward with now NIL and, you know, money and things like that. In Indiana, a high school player, because of amateur status, cannot accept any type of money. And in NIL would be an example of that. However, several states have changed that particular bylaw or law or whatever you want to, however you want to put it, to allow kids now to start earning money via NIL. And we talked about some of the more prominent players in Indiana. What is your take with Indiana's NIL status as it pertains to high school, you know, IHSA regulations? Are we at a point where schools need to Indiana needs to rethink their NIL and amateur status bylaws?
You know, the conversations I've had with, you know, IHSA and high school administrators and those sorts of people, there's definitely not a large appetite for it, I would say. And I think largely probably hope that it doesn't happen. You know, I do wonder if it was kind of like the, you know, kind of like the transfer situation where, you know, the IHSA didn't really want it, but the legislature kind of pushed for it. You know, I think that may be where you could see some, you know, some changes maybe happen on that front. You know, I don't know, you know, I don't know the right answer, you know, to that. I mean, I know some different states have done different things. You know, I think there's, definitely some questions of like pay for play situations that would be, you know, problematic. You know, what constitutes NIL, or, you know, what's allowed, what's not. I think it kind of opens a Pandora's box a little bit. I think that's what they're a little bit leery of, is, you know, allowing that to happen. And then how do you regulate it, or how do you kind of keep you know, your arms around it and make sure people are, you know, going by the rules and whatever. There's already, I had a coach tell me there's already, you know, with this transfer rule, and this part of our coaches confidential series that we do, but, you know, I was reading through some of the, you know, some of the responses, and, you know, one of them was told them, obviously this is off the record, but, you know, will be part of our coaches confidential series, is, you know, there's a school out there giving away money to kids now, and you know, promising, hey, we'll get you an Xbox, or, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, there's obviously stuff that goes on. I think that would be kind of the, you know, and hopefully hopefully those coaches are turning those schools in for stuff like that, because, you know, that's obviously not the intent of the transfer rule. But I think that's probably, you know, I think NIL could be allowed, you know, under the amateurism, you know, guidelines or whatever. But I think it would just be, you know, you have to be very clear on what, you know, what's, you know, what they're benefiting, you know, from, and how that will be, you know, if there's issues, you know, what will the penalties be and things like that. So, you know, I don't know if there's a whole lot of opportunities out there for high school kids to gain money, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's something, you know, that you know, it would have to happen, I guess, for us to see or look into whatever other states are doing and how that's kind of working out. That may be a good idea for a, you know, for a future story. But, you know, I know Ohio, there's a proposal a couple years ago, and it failed. And it's, you know, I, as far as I know, Ohio still does not allow it. I know some other states a little bit farther away from us do allow it, but yeah, I mean, that may be something to, you know, to kind of look into this fall a little bit more, of what other states are doing and how it's working there.
Well, kind of diving into that subject matter myself, I think right now, from what I'm gathering, outside of Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Texas, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and I believe Wyoming, and there's a few more in there, do not allow NIL aspects as it pertains to not encroaching on the amateurism aspect of their bylaws, but most states now permit it. That's the thing you're going to see. Most states will now, you know, will allow it, but you talked about the, you know, you got to have some restrictions and all that type of things. And, you know, the back of the restaurant deals and things like that written on on a napkin, or creating a competitive imbalance based upon where you're at in that regard. But I thought, you know, that is one thing that I do think that Indiana as a whole and the IHSAA are going to have to address, because the landscape has now changed at the collegiate level. And the fact that some of these kids, especially these top tier kids that are going to these P4 schools, you know, they're already in the mind of getting agents and people that understand the groundwork that's in front of them when it comes to the rev share aspect of things. And then of course the NIL aspect of things. So I just thought it was a interesting thing that I wanted to throw at you, get your, you know, kind of your feedback on it, because I do think that's going to be one topic that's going to have to be addressed sooner rather than later by the IHSAA when it comes to this, especially for these top tier kids that are getting, you know, Alabama's of the world, Indiana's of the world, Purdue and things like that. So just want to get your take on that. Appreciate your deal. And if I gave you a topic for a potential story down the road, hey, it's worked both ways today.
Yeah, and I've got more than enough, but yeah, that is one, you know, it's definitely, you know, on my radar. And I know a lot of states have, you know, I would guess if it came up for a vote, the IHSA board of directors, it would probably not pass, but but like I said, it may go, you know, I think Alabama or, you know, Arkansas, one of those states I know had, they voted it down, but then, you know, it came up in the legislature, and it's kind of going through that process now too. So, you know, I think if kids are making money, you know, outside of, you know, what their school, you know, what their high schools are doing, you know, maybe that would be allowable. But I don't know that I could see that could be problematic too. If you have coaches who are, you know, working with you on the side and getting you those deals, and then also they're on the staff at whatever high school you go to. So, and that would probably fall under, you know, some sort of undue influence or pass link violation or whatever. So it does, I could see where it could open up a mess, but I also get where, you know, as an athlete, you only have so long where you can kind of gain, you know, your best, you know, financial situation also. So I completely get that from an athlete's perspective as well.
Yeah. Because not every kid that goes to a P4 school or mid-major type of school is going to go into the NFL. And their best time to potentially earn money now is these years that are before them. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, some of these kids that come from, you know, rough backgrounds and such, you know, it's an opportunity for them to help out their family. And I think that's the one big thing that we're seeing now with all this is, you know, the other impact of how it may help families that, you know, have had hard times and things like that, or a single mom and a young man is able to the football or basketball help support, you know, their family in that regard. So let's jump over to basketball here a little bit, not to slight anything. Another thing that you had talked about is, you know, some of the top prospects in the state this year in basketball. And again, just as along with football, you got to say that even in basketball as well, these recruits are now becoming a big part of the fabric of Indiana, both in football and in basketball, in terms of a, I guess, media aspect, notoriety and stuff. But some of the top 25 basketball prospects you had and in-state, I want to talk a little bit about some of those kids. I know you had Luke Ertl, the kid from Mount Vernon, Fortville, probably number one overall in the class. Any, you know, and some updates maybe on the recruiting front on some of these kids. Welcome back. We're going to wrap things up here for Wednesday. Appreciate you for joining me here today as I sit in for Jim Coyle. Going to be back tomorrow as well, and hope that you will join me once again here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you for all the guests joining with us today. Kyle, Alec Lashley, Kyle Nettereep, and as of course, Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. Until then, this is the coach Shannon Griffith of the Hoosier.com. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.